Canto 9, Chapter 4. Ambarisha Maharaj offended by Durvasa Muni. Sri Shuka said, Nabaga, the learned youngest son of Nabaga, returning from a celibate life, received as his share of the kingdom the care for his father, because his older brothers already had divided the property among themselves. O my brothers, he said, what is the share you have reserved for me? We allot you our father as your share, they answered. He then said to his father, O father, my older brothers have not given me my share. The father thereupon replied, My son, do not take heed of that. The so highly intelligent descendants of Angira are today performing a sacrifice, but on every sixth day that they do this, O learned one, they will fall in illusion with their self-interested actions. Therefore, go to them and recite for those great souls two Vedic hymns relating to the God of the universe, Vasudeva, the Supreme Lord. After resuming their own course, they will hand the wealth over to you they received from their sacrifice. Doing what his father had told him, they gave him the proceeds of the yajna before they returned to their heavenly places. As he was collecting his riches, some person with a black countenance who had arrived from the north said to him, All these riches remaining from the sacrifice belong to me. He replied, They are all mine. The sages have handed them over to me. The black man said, Let us, concerning this matter, head for the son of Manu, your father, and ask him. And thus he inquired with his father as was proposed. Father Nabaga said, Everything that remains from the sacrifice is by the sages considered a share for Lord Shiva, thus they have once decided. He is the demigod who deserves it all. Nabaga offered him, Shiva, his obeisances and said, As my father said, everything from the sacrificial arena belongs to you, O Lord. O saintly one, let me bow my head to you. I beg your pardon. Lord Shiva said, All that your father said is true, and also what you are saying is the truth. Let me, the knower of the mantras, grant you the spiritual knowledge that is transcendental and eternal. Please, take all the riches. I give you all that has been offered to me. And having spoken this, Rudra, the great lord and guardian of the Dharma, vanished. Anyone who with great attention remembers this in the morning and in the evening becomes a scholar. He will become a knower of the mantras and the supreme destination, and thus be a self-realized soul. From Nabaga, the most exalted and highly celebrated devotee Ambarisha was born. A curse of a Brahmin against him failed. It never could touch him. The king said, O Lordship, I would like to hear about him, that king who was so intelligent that the most insurmountable power of a Brahmin's measure could not affect him. Sri Shuka said, Ambarisha, the man of great fortune, after achieving an unlimited opulence on this earth consisting of the 7 continents, meant that all that is so rarely obtained by many a ruler is as the riches one imagines in a dream. Coming to one's senses, it is all gone. It is the reason because of which a man falls in ignorance. Unto Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality, unto the devotees as also unto the saints, he had achieved the reverence and devotion in the transcendence of which one takes this entire universe for something as insignificant as a piece of stone. He was sure to fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, to use his words to describe the qualities of the Lord of Vaikuntha, to use his hands for matters as cleaning the Lord's temple, and to engage his ears in listening to the transcendental talks about the infallible one. He used his eyes to look at the deities, the temples and buildings of Mukunda. He used his body to be in touch with the bodies of the devotees. He used his nose to smell the fragrance of the tulsi leaves on the lotus flower formed by his feet, and used his tongue to relish the food that is offered to him. By using his legs to walk to the Lord's holy places, by using his head to bow down to the feet of Rishikesha, and by engaging his senses more in being a servant of him than a servant of his lusty desires, he was like the ones who seek their refuge in being attached to the Lord glorified in the scriptures. Thus, in his prescribed duties, always being of sacrifice unto the transcendence, the original enjoyer of the sacrifice, the Supreme Lord beyond the senses, he exercised all the different forms of devotional service and ruled, under the guidance of his faithfully devoted scholars, this planet Earth. With horse sacrifices executed by Brahmins like Vasishtha, Asita, and Gautama, he worshipped in all places where the Sarasvati river flowed through the desert countries, the Lord of Sacrifice, the supreme controller with great opulence and all the prescribed paraphernalia and remuneration. During the sacrificial ceremonies before the deities, the finely dressed members of the assembly, the priests and the other functionaries could be recognized as the ever-vigilant demigods. A heavenly existence, as cherished by the demigods, was not a thing desired by his citizens, who were accustomed to hearing and chanting the glories of Uttama Shloka, the Lord hailed in the verses. Persons accustomed to having Mukunda in their hearts rarely desire the perfections of the great ones, because such aspirations go at the cost of the happiness of being in one's constitutional position of rendering service. He, the king, who, in Bhakti Yoga, being engaged in austerities, in his constitutional activities unto the Lord, satisfied all sorts of desires, thus, step by step, gave it up to fix his mind upon temporal matters as having a home, a wife, children, friends and relatives, a good elephant, a nice chariot and fine horses and durable goods, like having jewels, ornaments, a nice outfit and such, and a never-empty treasury. Pleased with his unalloyed devotional service, the Lord gave him his chakra, disc weapon, that protects the devotees, but is so fearful to the ones opposing him. Aspiring to worship Krishna together with his equally qualified queen, the king observed the vow of Dvadashi, fasting on certain lunar days for a whole year. At the end of that vow, he in the month Kartika, for 3 nights observed a complete fast with 1 meal during the day, whereupon he, after taking a bath in the Yamuna, worshipped Lord Krishna in Madhuvana. With all paraphernalia for doing puja, he, according to the rules, bathed the deity and dressed it with nice clothing and ornaments, fragrant flower garlands and other means of service, in his worship of the greatly fortunate Lord Keshava and the Brahmins, that he performed with a mind filled with divine love and devotion. After having donated to the Brahmin sages, the scholars who had arrived at his place, 60 crores of nicely decorated, young and beautiful cows, equipped with gold-covered horns and silver-plated hooves, full udders and with calves at their side, he firstly sumptuously fed them with the most heavenly, delicious food. When he, to the full of their satisfaction and with their permission, next ended his own fasting and was about to observe the concluding ceremony, they all of a sudden were confronted with an unexpected visit of the mighty sage Durvasa. Despite having appeared there uninvited, the king showed his respect by standing up and offering him a seat. Thereupon he asked him, with all regards having fallen at his feet, whether he would like to eat something. He gladly accepted that request and went, in order to perform the necessary rituals, to the Yamuna to dip into the auspicious water and meditate on the Supreme Brahman. That, with half a muhurta left before the end of the Dvadashi fast that was observed, made the king, together with the Brahmins, wonder what would be the appropriate notion of dharma for the precarious situation he had run into. Both failing to respect the Brahmin sage and not to break with the fast of Dvadashi at the right time is an offense. What now is the best thing to do? What would be irreligious and what not? So let me touch water only, so that I correctly may conclude the vow, because, O scholars, the act of drinking water is considered to be indeed both eating and not eating. The great king drank water, and then, with his mind turned to the Infallible One, waited for the Brahmin mystic to return, O best of the Kurus. After Durvasa had finished the rituals at the bank of the Yamuna and returned, he was well received by the king, but he discovered by his insight what had taken place. Trembling with anger, he, with a tightened face, frowning and also hungry, addressed the offender who stood there with folded hands. "Alas, has this one here, this love of the people, in his madness about his opulence for everyone to see, violated the Dharma? No devotee of Vishnu at all, he thinks he is the Lord himself. Unexpectedly arriving here, I was by this man invited to be his guest, but now he has taken food without sharing it with me. I will show you directly what the consequence is." Speaking thus, he, red with anger, pulled a bunch of hair out of his head and created a demon for him resembling the fire at the end of time. As the demon approached him, with a trident blazing with fire in his hand and a footstep that made the earth tremble, the king, seeing him in front, did not move an inch from the spot. The way it by the original person of the Supersoul was arranged for the protection of his devotees, the chakra that Ambarisha had received, like a fire burnt to ashes, that angry serpent of a created demon. Seeing that his attempt had failed and that the disc was coming after him, Durvasa in great fear ran wherever he could, looking for a refuge to save his life. When the Muni saw the disc, that chariot wheel of the Lord, closely behind his back, he quickly, like a snake pursued by the flames of a highly blazing forest fire, ran to Mount Meru to enter a cave there. But in whatever direction Durvasa fled, of the sky, the earth's surface, in caves, in seas, or to all the worlds up to heaven, he saw the unbearable Sudarshana Chakra. Without a protector, he, with a constant fear in his heart, was looking everywhere for someone to give shelter. At last he approached Lord Brahma and prayed, "O my Lord, O Self-Born One, save me from this invincible fire." Lord Brahma said, "At the end of my lifetime, when his pastimes have ended, the Lord of the End Time, Vishnu, the Self of Time, with a single movement of his eyebrows will destroy this universe, including my heavenly abode. I, Lord Shiva, Daksha, Bhrigu, and the other sages, as also the rulers of men, the rulers of the living beings, and the rulers of the demigods, all carry out his orders, and together bow, for the salvation of all living beings, our heads in surrender to the principle regulating our lives." Durvasa, who, scorched by Vishnu's chakra, was turned down by Lord Brahma, next, for his shelter, went to the one who always resides on Kailasa, Lord Shiva. Sri Shankara said, "My dear one, we have no power over the Supreme One, the transcendence in person, with whom I, the other living beings, and even Lord Brahma wander around within the countless universes that, together with us, at times arise and then are destroyed again. I, Sanat, and the other Kumaras, Narada, the great unborn Lord, Kapila, Vyasadeva, Devala, the great sage, Yamaraj, Asuri, the saint, Marichi and other masters of perfect knowledge, headed by him, have learned to know the limits of all there is to know, but none of us can fully comprehend his illusory energy of Maya and that what is covered by it. The weapon of the controller of the universe, the chakra, is even for us difficult to handle, and you should therefore seek your refuge with the Lord, who will certainly bestow upon you his happiness and fortune. Durvasa, disappointed, thereafter went to the abode of the Supreme Lord known as Vaikuntha, where he, as Srinivasa, the master of the abode, lives together with the goddess of fortune. Scorched by the fire of the invincible weapon, he fell down at his lotus feet, trembling all over, and said, O infallible and unlimited one, O desire of the saintly ones, O master, offer me, this great offender, protection, O well-wisher of the entire universe. Not knowing about your inconceivable prowess, I have committed a great offense at the feet of someone dear to your lordship. Please be so kind to do whatever is needed to counteract an offense like this, O Vidata, Lord of Regulation, by the pronunciation of whose name a person can even be delivered from hell. The Supreme Lord said, Precisely, O Brahmin, I am not self-willed, I am fully committed to my bhaktas. My heart is controlled by devotees free from material desires. Even a devotee of my devotee is dear to me. I, their ultimate destination, take without my saintly devotees no interest in the blissful essence or the elevation of my opulences. How could I give up on those who, taking shelter with me, gave up their wife, house, children, relatives, their lives, wealth, and promotion to a superior position? The way a gentle husband acts according to the wishes of a chaste and devoted wife, I am controlled by pure and equal-minded pious souls who, in their hearts firmly being attached to me, engage in devotional service. Devoted to me, they do not hanker for the completeness of the four types of liberation they automatically achieve by simply being of service. Why would they care about other matters that are all lost over time? Pure devotees are always in my heart, and I am always in theirs. They know nothing outside of me, and I do not have the least interest outside of them. Let me now tell you how you can protect yourself in this matter. O scholar, listen attentively to what I have to tell you. With this action of yours, you have violated yourself. Waste no time any longer and go forthwith to him, Ambarisha, because of whom all this took place. As you can see, the power applied against a devotee turns against the one guilty thereof. Penance and knowledge bring learned souls the greatest welfare, but practiced by an obstinate person, they result in the opposite. O Brahmin, I wish you all the happiness of the world. Go therefore to the king, the son of Nabaga, to satisfy that great personality. Then there will be peace.